Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Regionally, the prevalence of food insecurity in the Northeast, Midwest, and West was statistically significantly lower than the prevalence of food insecurity in the South in 2023. Compared with the national average, food insecurity was statistically significantly below the national average in 2023 in the Northeast and above the national average in the South.
USDA researcher Matthew Rabbit.
The households that typically experience food insecurity rates at higher than the national average from year to year tend to be the same. And so, for example, in 2023, the prevalence of food insecurity was statistically significantly above the national average for all households with children, women living alone, households with a Black, non-Hispanic, and Hispanic reference person, households with incomes below 185% of the federal poverty line, households in principal cities and non-metropolitan areas, and households in the South.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We've been watching a farm bill debate now for some time. Early discussions in 2023 ultimately produced no bill, but just an extension, so we could start this debate over again in 2024.
University of Nebraska at Lincoln Extension Policy Specialist Brad Lubin.
Just in time for a federal election to commence, and so lots of difficulty in trying to get it to passage. We have issues in the bill itself over content, particularly in nutrition title and nutrition assistance in the conservation title, and some modifications in the commodity title as well. But I would argue that the debate over the content of the bill is less of an issue than the debate over the timing of the bill. There are fundamental issues and fundamental questions about how different parts of the farm bill might work. But the real question is, well, what about the funding? And to date, we have seen positions on funding. We have seen no sense of compromise or work towards a pragmatic solution. And in the middle of a campaign, it's hard to imagine that that's coming. So the real issue is probably the timing. And more it looks like the first opportunity really to talk about a farm bill is probably in a lame duck session after the election. And even then, there's questions about how much possibility there is for success.
Lubin says there's an old adage when it comes to the future of the farm bill.
It's easier to campaign on what you promised than what you actually delivered. That's one of the reasons why it's hard to imagine getting a farm bill done before the election, because who's going to give up on principles now? We come to the lame duck session. Well, are people willing to be pragmatic and reach some compromise at that point? If Congress or if Washington is still split in terms of political power, it's possible to imagine a compromise to get it done, largely along status quo lines, and just get it off the floor and out the door so that it's not hanging over the next session of Congress. At the moment, either party has reason to think that it might gain more power in the next session of Congress and in the White House itself. And so there's a lot of reason to imagine that based on the outcome of the election, if either party is in line to control the next session of Congress, it's easy to imagine them saying, we're going to wait, because at least in the new session of Congress, we can reintroduce this legislation and do it, quote unquote, the right way. Mm-hmm. So the chances of compromise themselves look somewhat thin, at least as long as or until we know how power shakes out in the new Congress and in the White House. Even if we don't do anything other than a simple extension, we still see policy that will change for producers in the coming year. A simple extension of the existing farm program would mean a continuation of current support programs, but under changing safety net levels. Because the ARC program for producers changes every year based on moving average yield and price components of the revenue guarantee. And PLC moves as well. There's a moving average price component of the reference price in there as well. And for at least the commodities here in the Midwest, that price is actually moving higher yet. Even though current prices are falling substantially in the current year, the historical moving average is still trending up. And so the safety net in 2025 might look bigger than the safety net in 2024, even under a simple extension of current policy.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Planting time is coming soon for wheat, winter wheat. That means there's a crop insurance deadline coming up on September 30th, so producers have to make some decisions.
Jenny Ift is a Kansas State ag economist and warns wheat producers may not make a profit in 25.
I just looked at our recently updated wheat budgets on Ag Manager Info, and I don't want to sugarcoat it. It's really not pretty. For all wheat types across the state, it looks like variable costs are running about 60 to 70% of expected returns. But for not a single one of them is anyone able to cover their fixed expenses. So nobody is projected to break even once you take into account all their costs. Now, these are average numbers, so everybody's situation is different. But what it says is that a lot of people are just going to be getting by in 2025 for our wheat producers. And if somebody, you know, does have lower costs, they're going to make money, but maybe not a lot. So it's going to be a tough go this year for sure.
Which is why there's a farm safety net. She talks about crop insurance.
In the past, we talked about crop insurance and protecting your profit margin. And this year, it's more of a can you cover your costs type of situation. So again, the current projected price, crop insurance price for wheat is $5.76. We're still in price discovery till the middle of the month. But we are looking at crop insurance premiums that are probably going to be about $2 to $3 per acre less than last year. And that's just because of those lower prices. That's for your standard underlying revenue protection policy. Most farmers go with that option looking at about, you know, 65%, 70%, 75% coverage level. For producers who do want to cover more of their expected revenue, supplemental coverage option SCO and the enhanced coverage option are available. They're both partially paid for by the federal government. If you go the supplemental coverage option route, it'll take your protection up to 86%. Those payoffs are going to be triggered by county yields. And if you had base acres with ARC, you can't use SCO. So that's where the program interaction gets in place. The other option, an enhanced coverage option, that can take you up to 90 or 95% coverage level. Again, those are county-based. One change is the subsidy levels for ECO are now the same as SCO. So there's going to be a lower cost to producers this year. It's still going to be a little bit more expensive than SCO because the higher coverage level you get, the more risk you have, the more likely you are to get a payout.
From crop insurance to risk of options.
So if you look at ARC and PLC, those are free. ARC's going to provide some additional revenue protection, so either low yields or low prices. PLC is going to provide that price protection, and it can pay out even when yields are high. SCO is quite similar to ARC, but you have to pay. One reason you might want to do it is if you want to get up to a higher coverage level, say like an 85% revenue protection, it's going to be a lot more cost effective than doing that with an individual policy. With your standard revenue protection policy, there's also the harvest price option. So if there is a drought, SCO can pay out at higher prices at harvest. One drawback with SCO, you can't use it with ARC. ECO is more flexible. Then you could use it with ARC or PLC. You don't have to worry about base acres. It does get a little bit more costly for that 95% ECO. It is such a high coverage level, though, if you think in price decline 5% to trigger a payment, you know, over the course of the year. It can trigger a lot based on price. So in some ways, it works like a put option, except when you have high yields, because it is a revenue product. So, you know, if you had a big price drop, but the county has higher yields, it might not trigger. So it's going to provide some of the protection similar to a put, but not all of it.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I think if you look at the various perspectives involved in influencing the dietary guidelines, and I should be clear, there are a lot of folks here inside the Beltway trying to influence this process to make sure that guidelines are written in a way, whether they have an interest in sustainability, an interest in a particular agricultural product and a manufactured product. It's big business here inside the Beltway.
Brandon Lips is a former administrator of USDA's Food and Nutrition Service on the effectiveness of the guidelines.
The Dietary Guidelines for Americans is measured on how well we Americans do on a test called the Healthy Eating Index, another acronym here in the Beltway called HEI. But the fascinating thing is that for decades, Americans have scored a 58 out of 100 on the Healthy Eating Index. So when you say, what have we gotten right and what have we gotten wrong? What we certainly haven't gotten right is that we're changing Americans' eating habits in a positive way in line with the dietary guidelines. So fundamentally, that's where I am on. Maybe we need to go back to the fundamentals in the way that we message to Americans how they can eat more healthy. I think the thing that we often get wrong is that we create nutrition headlines. So if you think back over time, the health advocates were after fats. Fats were terrible. And industry created a fat that everybody thought was okay, and it turned out it was awful. So we pulled that off the market, and then we moved on and started beating up on products high in sodium. And then we moved on over to sugar, and you still hear a lot about that today, beating up on sugar and America's sugar farmers. The reality is, Tony, that over the last 20 years, sugar consumption in this country is down 30%, and obesity is up roughly 40%. So while some of us may still consume too much sugar in our diet, it's not the core problem with Americans' obesity epidemic. I think we need to get back to the basics and think more about how we message, how we help Americans make better choices by meeting them where they are. And maybe this committee is getting a little too finite in the questions when they're trying to look for new nutrition advice every 5 years. Sometimes the committee tends to wander off into issues like sustainability. Again, a very important topic that I think we all agree we need to talk about. But is a committee of nutrition scientists the right place to be talking about sustainability? Certainly many of us don't think that's the right place. And this year, the secretaries have decided that that should be considered in a separate committee.
But why does it matter to farmers and ranchers?
Dietary guidelines process is open for public comment throughout the entirety of the process. It will go through the end of this year. So as folks are looking, they can go to dietaryguidelines.gov and they'll find a forum where they can make comments on input for the dietary guidelines. Certainly, there are many wonderful associations representing America's farmers here in D.C. that are taking care of those comments, but want the public to know that that's available. Congress and the House Farm Bill that was passed out of the House Ag Committee here a few months back, they've got some proposals about how to ensure that we're looking at the right science and we're framing that properly in the dietary guidelines. I expect that'll be much debated as we look for the Senate to put a process out. But really, at the end of the day, I think as we back up and look at this process, it's where I said earlier, we have to meet Americans where they are. Inside the Beltway, we tend to get wrapped around the axle on making new recommendations and spending a lot of money studying things and putting out advice on top of advice, which really just turns into chaos for the consumer when we're trying to decide, is it too much fat, too much sugar, is it too much of everything? Most of us know we need to exercise more and we need to eat less. We need to make half our plates fruits and vegetables. We need to rotate our proteins. We need 3 servings of dairy a day to make sure that we get the right vitamins and nutrients. So I think we all have a lot of personal choices to make for our own good. And for those of us who have a hard time, the government needs to think about how they can meet Americans where they are in making better decisions and maybe put out less headlines and more action and meeting people where they are.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Honestly, trade is so important to every industry, but certainly important to agriculture.
Chairman of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania is G.T. Thompson.
And just reflect, Tony, real quickly on the Great Recession of 2008, 2009. I mean, agriculture was really one of the only industries that were not impacted negatively in that recession. And it was because at that point we had a robust trade. We didn't have a trade deficit. And that income, those foreign dollars coming into our country for selling American produced commodities, it made all the difference. It helped us deal with whatever issues were happening financially from a domestic perspective. And so, USDA is projecting going forward that it'll be a $35 billion trade deficit. And that's just completely unacceptable. I think part of that is where we're at today, currently with the trade deficit. I think it's a reflection of the lack of leadership of honestly with the Biden-Harris administration. When you think about it, and just a couple facts to put on the table, two of the key positions when it comes to agriculture trade, one is the chief agriculture negotiator with USTR, and the other one is the undersecretary for foreign agriculture and trade at USDA. Both those positions were left open and vacant for 2 years. So when we were dealing with problems with USMCA, when we were dealing with China's compliance with the trade deal that was negotiated by President Trump, there was nobody at the table. We didn't have individuals who were really qualified and influential at the table. And And so I am not surprised the trade deficit is where it is. Now, I give credit where credit's due. When they finally filled those positions, I think they identified two pretty remarkable people that are in place today. But to go half your term, without people at the table, I just don't think agriculture trade was, quite frankly, was really, really important to the Biden administration. I don't think rural America was important, and certainly not agriculture. That said, within the Farm Bill, we know it's important. I mean, I heard that all across the country with all the listening sessions that we've done all across the United States. And we've responded. We've listened, we heard, and we acted. The Farm Food and National Security Act of 2024 doubles. I want to say that again. It doubles both Foreign Market Access Program and the Foreign Market Development Program and the Market Access Program. And I think that can help maybe prevent this significant forecast trade deficit, which is forecasted at this point.
Thompson on the growing ag trade debate, but what about the safety net? Robin Reed at Kansas State.
There's two things that we want to talk about. One of them is your crop insurance that, again, you're making your selections before September 30th this year. And the other one are the Title I programs, so the ARC and PLC that producers are, used to, as we've had those since the 2014 Farm Bill. So we want to talk today about just making those selections. And obviously, the ARC and PLC is a little bit up in the air. Right now, we're looking at a likely extension of the 2018 Farm Bill, which would mean we would be making these decisions by March 15th of next year. But for wheat producers who are selecting their crop insurance, there's always that interaction between if you purchase the supplemental coverage option on your crop insurance, then you will not be able to enroll those base acres in the ARC program.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
So for the ARC and PLC decision, unfortunately, there's just not much out there yet. And wheat producers tend to fall into this, unfortunately, because of the time frame.
Robin Reed is an agricultural economist at Kansas State on the ARC and PLC decisions.
Farm Service Agency won't put out a lot of numbers or anything, especially because we don't have an extension of this Farm Bill. And right now the prices and things aren't going to be published because these programs may or may not be available. But, as far as the crop insurance decision, there are resources that we have on Ag Manager that would help with that. Just on those higher coverage policies, the SCO and the ECO, one thing producers haven't used them before that might get a little tricky is the timing of the payments. Yeah. When we have those coverage policies that go based on a county yield, that county yield is not actually released until June the following year. And so we'll be putting wheat in the ground here in Kansas very soon. We will obviously be harvesting that next summer. That's the start of the marketing year for the programs I just talked about. So there's like a year and a half lag in wheat production. Well, ECO and SCO, the higher coverage policy levels, have a similar issue. So when we harvest wheat next summer, that wheat yield at the county level will not be released till June of the following year. And that's when those payments will be received. Now, I think in the long run, both of these coverages have made money because of, as Jenny talked about, the 65% government subsidy on the premium. But as we get into these tough times, cash flow is going to be an issue. And when we're paying higher premiums and waiting a year and a half to where we might get a potential payment, that could very much be a cash flow issue. Even profitability-wise makes sense, but maybe feasibility-wise won't. And to reassure our producers out there, crop insurance is permanently authorized. So that's why we can talk about this program is continuing no matter what happens with the Farm Bill. It's that ARC and PLC that would be kind of the question as we go forward.
Brad Lubin is an extension policy specialist with the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
It's first recognizing that those programs really sort of work in concert with other things. We've talked about the ARC and PLC programs, the farm program, commodity programs, and they provide price or revenue protection for producers, and they do so by protecting current year results against in the case of ARC, a moving average revenue target or a moving average revenue guarantee, and in the case of price, against a and now actually a moving average price guarantee with a minimum built into the equation. But fundamentally, play all that out. ARC and PLC provide producers some revenue and price protection against longer run declines in prices. The crop insurance tools kick in and offer that risk protection for the current year. And so if you back up and think, well, how did crop insurance play out? Well, compare for crops the base price against current price projections, and there's an awful lot of protection that was built into the base price in crop insurance this year. So it's providing both production protection and some protection from the current drop in prices. The farm program similarly provides some longer run protection in the sense of protecting this year's prices or revenue losses against a moving average. Both of them still really don't offer perfect protection against the long run. There's still the need on both the price side and the production side to manage for the long run.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Be proactive when it comes to the changes that have been proposed for the milk marketing orders here in the United States.
Kansas State Dairy Specialist is Dr. Mike Brook. He's looking at changes to milk marketing orders.
You know, as we look at our milk marketing orders, they really haven't had substantial changes since they were first initiated in 2000. And I need to encourage you as dairy producers that these milk marketing orders have been requested by you, the dairy farmer, through the dairy industry to make sure that you get a fair and equitable price for the raw milk that you're shipping every day off your farm or every other day, depending on the case. So it is your duty and your right to participate in these hearings. The hearings have all been held, and the USDA has made a proposal that they're now accepting public comments on. So you have until September 13th to make your comments, and you can do those either in a written fashion, or they do have a website that you can do them online if you prefer, and that might be the easiest for you to do. I would encourage you to spend some time visiting with your fellow dairymen as well as maybe your milk co-op that you ship to determine what those comments might look like as you move forth with trying to have some input into this process. There are many changes, and some of those will bring some positive impacts to your milk check, and others may or may not, depending on given market situations. Some of these we're fairly excited about. For example, there has been some changes in how calculations are done based on the contents of solids in the milk. These, again, have not been updated for many years, since 2008, and those were small changes. So it's really time that, based on the changes in the raw milk supply in the United States, that we do make those changes. It's also important to note that there are changes in how raw milk will be priced based on the prices that we're receiving for different dairy products being manufactured out of that raw milk. So there's some substantial changes there. I'd encourage you to spend some time learning what those changes are and how they might impact your dairy farm and your milk check. I want to encourage you that this process does not end on September 13th. That's just a comment period. The USDA will take all of those comments into consideration as they move forward to a final vote on the changes, which will probably happen sometime in early 2025. When that occurs, you would have the opportunity to actually cast a ballot, a yay or nay, for these particular changes. You will have to visit with your co-op to determine whether or not you can cast a ballot individually or if your ballot will be cast with the rest of your co-op members. Different rules apply for that depending on your co-op that you actually ship to. So I would encourage you in advance to visit with your milk co-op representative about how that will actually work in your particular case. I want you to also realize that if the changes in the milk marketing orders are not passed, we run the risk of running without milk marketing orders, and that could be problematic for us as well.
And again, the deadline for comments, September 13th. For more information, do a search for federal milk marketing order. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today. USDA's annual look at household food security in our nation reveals that for 2023,
food insecurity among U.S. households increased from 12.8% in 2022 to 13.5% in 2023.
Economic researcher Matthew Rabbit adds,
very low food security, a more severe form of food insecurity, was unchanged.
Reported at 5.1% of U.S. households per the latest Household Food Security in the U.S. study. The findings regarding households with children in the context of food security include,
for changes between 2022 and 2023, we are not seeing any changes in child food insecurity at all between 2022 and 2023.
Statistically similar at just under 9% of American households. More information about the household food security in the U.S. report and its findings are located online at www.ers.usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.